This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Friendness, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about MarTech from calendar weeks 24 and 25. Friendness is a B2B market research company that supports enterprise marketing teams in unlocking the full potential of their customer data with the help of AI. You can find more info in the description. This edition is brought to you in partnership with B2B Marketing. Don't miss out on B2B Ignite 2026, taking place on 1 July 2026 in London. The event brings together leading voices in B2B marketing for a full day of keynotes, practical workshops, peer networking, and hands-on problem-solving sessions across demand, brand, leadership, and tech. Find the registration link in the description.
So, in June, someone reportedly offered $1.2 billion just to know exactly who your customers are.
Which is just a staggering amount of money for identity tracking.
Right. I mean, not to buy a new software platform, not to get some slick new marketing dashboard, just to own that underlying connective glue, you know, the stuff that tracks identity across the internet. So welcome to the deep dive.
Yeah, glad to have you all here, because today we are basically tearing down the architecture of B2B marketing as you know it.
Exactly. Because the foundation is, well, it is fundamentally cracking. And it is being rebuilt in real time.
It really is. And that $1.2 billion number, it is still ringing in my head, honestly. We have spent the last few days just combing through the top MarTech trends that surfaced across the industry in calendar weeks 24 and 25.
There was a lot to sift through. Definitely.
A ton. But our mission for this deep dive is to cut through all that hype, you know, to figure out the actual mechanics of what is happening beneath the surface.
Because we are looking at a complete rewiring of customer data and AI right now.
Exactly. So let's just start with the tectonic shift that triggered all of this, which is the data warehouse essentially swallowing the marketing stack whole.
Yeah, that is a great way to put it. I mean, for a very long time, the data warehouse was just passive storage. It was the basement archive where your data just went to sit and die.
Right. Just a bunch of SQL tables nobody in marketing ever looked at.
Yeah. Exactly. But mechanically, that is changing fast. We are seeing the warehouse become the active operational center of gravity.
Which brings us to what Katie Ewan posted about, right? The Day is 2026 summit.
Yeah. So at that summit, Databricks unveiled Customer Lake to an audience of like 30,000 leaders.
That is massive.
It is. And they are billing it as an agentic CDP that is natively embedded right inside the Databricks Lakehouse.
Okay, I need to pause you there because the terminology gets really dense quickly. When you say an agentic CDP embedded natively mechanically, how is that different from what an enterprise marketing team actually does today?
Well, today they buy a standalone customer data platform, a CDP, and they just pipe their data into it.
Right. They set up the connectors, they pipe it over.
But that piping is the entire problem. In the traditional model, your data lives in a warehouse. To use it, your CDP has to make API calls to copy that data, pull it over, sync it, and then store a duplicate version of it in its own silo.
And then your email platform probably copies it again, right?
Exactly. It is incredibly inefficient. It is prone to latency. And, you know, it is a total nightmare for security.
Oh, I bet.
So the shift with something like Customer Lake is what we call zero copy architecture. You are no longer moving the data to the marketing tools.
You bring the tools to the data.
Precisely. You are bringing the identity resolution, the audience building, directly to where the data already lives. So no copying, no syncing delays.
So just to use an analogy here, the old CDP model is like having a translator who has to constantly run back and forth between two different embassy buildings just to relay a message.
That is exactly what it is like.
And the Lakehouse model simply puts all the ambassadors in a single room speaking a universal language. No one has to leave the building.
That captures the mechanics perfectly, yeah. And it really explains Sigurd Dyrek's reaction to this whole launch.
What did he say about it?
He pointed out that the CDP, as a software category, was actually never a product problem. It was always a data architecture problem in disguise.
Oh, wow. That is a sharp way to look at it.
Right. I mean, marketing teams spent years and literally millions of dollars buying standalone CDPs to try and fix fragmented, messy data.
Yeah, bolting a shiny interface on top of a broken foundation.
Exactly. And by putting the CDP inside the Lakehouse, Databricks is essentially arguing that you just cannot fix marketing without fixing the underlying data architecture first.
Like putting a supercomputer in a car with no wheels. As Sigurd said, you are just running autonomous campaigns confidently wrong, just faster.
Confidently wrong, exactly.
But wait, I mean, isn't that incredibly self-serving for Databricks to say, like, hey, marketers, to fix your campaigns, you simply must buy our massive enterprise data infrastructure?
Well, sure, there's obviously a motive there.
Right. Is it actually better for the marketer, or is it just gravity winning out for the big data providers? I know David Chan weighed in on this.
He did. And Chan makes a really vital distinction here. He noted that the CDP isn't a dying category waiting to be commoditized.
Okay, so it isn't going away.
No, it has simply become a capability so deeply foundational that embedding it into the data infrastructure is actually proof of its ultimate importance.
I see. It graduated from being a tool to being infrastructure.
Exactly. Yeah. However, to your point about Databricks just pushing its own narrative, mm-hmm. David Rabb offered a very sharp contrary perspective.
Oh, interesting. What's his take?
He argues the data warehouse simply cannot be the sole source of truth for marketing.
Wait, why not? If this zero-copy architecture is so efficient and all the historical data is just sitting right there, why wouldn't it be the source of truth?
Because of latency and context. Think about the mechanics of a real-time customer interaction for a second.
Okay, like someone browsing a pricing page.
Exactly. A buyer is on your website right now clicking around while simultaneously your inventory levels for a specific service tier are fluctuating.
Right, and that split-second contextual data doesn't live neatly in the warehouse yet.
Exactly. It takes time to get there. Rob argues that routing all those real-time, unstructured signals through a central warehouse first, just to make a split-second marketing decision,
is like routing local traffic through a national highway system.
Yes, exactly. It is just too slow. He believes the true heart of MarTech isn't the data store. It is the orchestration layer.
The system that can actually access data wherever it sits to make immediate decisions.
Exactly.
Look, I see the logic there. If you rely purely on the warehouse, you might have a perfectly unified historical profile, but you completely miss the context of what the buyer was doing literally 3 seconds ago.
Right. It is a blind spot.
So for the enterprise teams out there trying to build their roadmaps, I think Bindiya S. Raj had some really good advice. She said you have to stop evaluating these tools in isolation.
Yeah, you can no longer just run an RFP for a standalone CDP.
Exactly. You have to evaluate the full data to activation stack. The warehouse, the orchestration, the channels, all as one single architectural decision.
And that architectural decision brings up a massive operational hurdle, frankly.
Which is?
Well, if you agree that the lakehouse is the new foundation and you aren't copying data out to external tools anymore, how do you actually identify who the person is?
Right.
Because data doesn't naturally know that, you know, user 123 browsing your site on a mobile device is the exact same person as John Doe in your CRM.
Which brings us right back to that $1.2 billion number we started with.
Exactly.
We have all this unified data sitting in a governed lakehouse, but without a way to map the identities across different devices and touch points, I mean, it is just a very fast, very expensive filing cabinet.
A filing cabinet that can't read its own files.
Yeah.
And that perfectly explains the explosive news that HITouch reportedly made a bid for LiveRamp's ID assets.
Right. And Martin King called that move an act of existential panic, didn't he?
He did. And to understand why, you really have to look at the mechanics of identity resolution. You see, HITouch is known as a reverse ETL company.
Meaning they help move data out of the warehouse.
Right. But if Databricks is building customer lake so data never has to leave in the first place, the entire value proposition of moving data kind of just dissolves.
So HITouch naturally looks to acquire a real-time deterministic ID graph because they have to own something foundational.
Precisely. Matthew Niederberger even noted that this specific scramble to own infrastructure really defined the month of June.
Let's actually break down that term for a second. Deterministic ID graph, because that is essentially the core of the $1.2 billion valuation, right?
Right. It is the holy grail.
Because a probabilistic graph just sort of guesses who a user is based on IP addresses, browser cookies, behavioral patterns. It is an educated guess.
Yeah, it is fuzzy math.
But a deterministic graph uses hard identifiers, like a hashed email address from a user who actually logged into a portal. It knows for a fact who you are.
Exactly. And as third-party cookies vanish, deterministic matching is basically the only reliable way to connect the dots anymore.
So the whole scramble is about bringing that deterministic matching directly to the data.
Yep. Marcy Bontadelli highlighted that Axiom Real ID is now natively available inside Databricks Customer Lake.
Oh, natively. That is huge.
Very huge. And Dave Lambert noted that Iterable is a launch partner as well. The mechanical goal of all of this is identity resolution without ever exposing PII.
Personally identifiable information.
Right. You don't have to send your customer list out to a dozen different external vendors to be matched anymore. The matching algorithm literally comes to your secure database.
Which is where things start to sound, I don't know, a little dangerous for legacy MarTech platforms.
How so?
Well, think about it. If the data isn't moving and the identity matching is happening natively inside the lakehouse, what exactly is holding the marketing stack together?
Ah, right. The glue.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Mike Berry's observation here. He pointed out that historically, marketing teams bought CDPs because they desperately needed a platform to hold everything together.
They essentially paid six figures just to buy the connective glue.
Exactly. But if AI is fundamentally replacing that connective work, I mean, historically, you needed a CDP to map the data fields, build the logical rules for an audience, stitch the API connections to your email platforms.
But today, an AI agent could just sit on top of a resolved customer store in the lakehouse and do all of that.
Natively.
Right. It can interpret a natural language request like, find me all enterprise buyers who looked at pricing yesterday.
And it just builds the audience via SQL, assembles the creative, and pushes it out.
The manual stitching that a CDP used to do is now just a task an AI can execute natively. It is wild.
So the six-figure hidden cost of marketing was literally just the stitching.
Pretty much.
And if AI does that stitching for fractions of a penny now, the entire battleground shifts.
Yeah.
Christopher Marriott summed this up so well.
What did he say?
He said the strategic focus for organizations is totally moving. We used to ask, who owns the customer profile? Now the real question is, who can act on customer intelligence most effectively with minimal friction?
That distinction is huge. The difference between merely storing intelligence and actively executing on it. That is the dividing line for the next era of B2B marketing.
We are moving from human marketers manually clicking buttons and building logic trees to autonomous agentic AI workflows.
Which means we are talking about building the customer brain.
Yes. I am honestly fascinated by this concept of agentic marketing, mostly because B2B feels weirdly behind the curve here.
It really does. Arjun Pillai made a really sharp observation about that. He pointed out that capital has completely flooded into AI for the sales side.
Oh, absolutely. Endless AI sales development reps, outbound email bots, automated dialers.
Right. But AI seems to be skipping the top of the funnel in B2B marketing entirely.
Yeah.
Brand interaction and complex buyer journeys have seen almost zero agentic innovation.
Why do you think that is?
Well, it really comes down to the mechanical difference between generating and reasoning. John Miller broke this down recently.
Okay, tell me more.
So generative AI, you know, the large language models we are all used to, it has made content personalization incredibly cheap. You can use an LLM to rewrite a cold email intro for 100 different prospects, and it costs practically nothing.
Right. But mechanically, that LLM is just predicting the next most likely word in a sequence. It is generating text. It is not reasoning.
Exactly. It's essentially just a massive mail merge on steroids.
Yeah, it sounds personalized, but there is absolutely no strategic intelligence behind why that specific email was sent at that specific time to that specific person.
Precisely. True one-to-one personalization requires an AI that can actually reason. Miller argues that a reasoning AI must simultaneously solve for four variables.
Which are?
The offer, the channel, the timing, and the content.
Okay, wow. And traditional rules-based systems, like, say, a Marketo logic tree, they could never weigh all those real-world signals at once.
Never. But an agentic AI can look at a buyer's history, the recent website activity, their company's funding news, and dynamically decide what to do.
Like, hey, this person shouldn't get the standard nurture email today. They should get a personalized case study delivered via a LinkedIn message next Tuesday.
Exactly. That requires complex decision making, not just text generation.
I see the challenge there, though, because if you want an AI to make that level of strategic decision, the underlying data has to be absolutely flawless.
It has to be perfect.
Which connects to a brilliant point Gerard Helu made about where marketing budgets are just being completely wasted right now.
Oh, yeah. Where are they wasting it?
He noted that every marketing team wants to buy the shiny AI tool that writes the campaign copy. But generating assets is abundant now. It's practically free.
Yeah.
The actual bottleneck, the scarce resource you should really be funding, is having the clean, resolved data to know if a campaign should even run in the first place.
Spending your budget on the generation layer while completely ignoring the data foundation is just backward.
Totally backward.
If you bolt an incredibly fast reasoning AI agent onto fragmented, broken data, it is just going to produce confident, expensive nonsense at an unprecedented scale.
Confident, expensive nonsense.
It will confidently email the exact wrong offer to your absolute biggest client.
That is the perfect way to describe bad automation. And it really highlights why Nabin Dupal's concept of the customer brain is so crucial right now.
Yeah, he drew a hard mechanical line between personalization and decisioning, didn't he?
He did. He said personalization is just making an experience relevant. You know, like putting their company name in the subject line.
Right, the basics.
But a customer brain handles the real-time decisioning long before personalization is even applied.
Because the mechanics of a customer brain involve continuously ingesting contextual signals and historical outcomes, right?
Exactly. To determine the next best action on a strictly mathematical level. If personalization is the wrapping paper, the customer brain is the intelligence deciding what actually goes in the box.
And whether the box should be sent at all, and who the courier should be.
Exactly. However, Nabandu also warned that enterprises are not fully ready to just build their own AI brains from scratch. It requires intense data governance. It is not just about buying a new software license.
The operational reality is definitely daunting, but I mean, the vision for where this leads is just wild. Kalra Vasavada and Dave Burkhead painted a picture of the near future that forces us to rethink the very definition of a marketer.
Oh, yeah. They argue that we need to stop thinking of MarTech as a passive dashboard.
Right. For the last 20 years, marketing meant a human logging into a CRM, logging into a social tool, and manually pulling levers. Burkhead says the era of the marketer login is ending.
So we need to treat MarTech as an active digital workforce instead.
Mechanically, what Burkhead is describing is an intelligent layer that sits above the traditional stack. The tools we use to log into every day, the email senders, the analytics dashboards, they're basically becoming invisible plumbing.
And the new primary interface is the AI agent itself.
Right. You interact with the agent layer, giving a strategic objective, and the agent goes down into the infrastructure, queries the data, builds the audience, and executes all the tasks across the different platforms.
Which is crazy, but we are actually already seeing this in the wild. If you look at platforms like Codex or Edward Unthank sharing an unofficial Marketo MCP.
A model context protocol.
Yeah. That protocol allows AI agents to securely connect to Marketo, write custom messages, and orchestrate dynamic email sends without a human ever opening the Marketo interface.
When the interface becomes the agent, it just raises massive implications for the structure of marketing teams.
Huge implications.
I mean, if the AI is doing the audience querying, the campaign building, and the channel execution, the role of the B2B marketer shifts entirely away from operational button pushing.
Let's actually pull that thread for a second. If we zoom out to, say, 2028, and this whole agentic vision is fully realized, what does a marketing team actually look like?
It's a great question.
Because if the stitching is gone and the execution is autonomous, who gets fired and who gets hired?
Well, it seems like the traditional campaign manager role basically vanishes.
Right. And instead, you need data governance engineers to maintain the lakehouse. And probably behavioral psychologists or strategists to feed the AI the right overarching business objectives.
That is the inevitable transition, I think. You move from a workforce of operators to a workforce of conductors.
The premium skill will no longer be knowing how to navigate the eccentricities of, you know, a specific software platform.
Right. It will be understanding customer psychology and possessing the analytical rigor to actually govern the AI's decision-making parameters.
So bringing all of this together for the listener who has to go to work tomorrow, look at their own MarTech roadmap and somehow make sense of these shifts. What is the ultimate takeaway from these past 2 weeks of industry upheaval?
Well, if we distill the mechanics of everything we have discussed today, from Databricks to LiverAmp to the customer brain, it really comes down to this. The future of B2B MarTech is no longer about buying more disconnected tools to treat symptoms. It is entirely about consolidating into unified zero-copy data foundations, solving for deterministic identity natively, and shifting your operations from manual campaign execution to autonomous agentic decision-making.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, channel marketing, AI in B2B marketing, go-to-market, and social selling.
Absolutely, check those out.
And before we let you go, I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over. We've spent this entire deep dive unpacking how B2B marketing is rapidly moving toward being run by autonomous, reasoning AI agents. But what happens in a few years when your enterprise buyers start using their own AI agents to research vendors, read case studies, and execute purchases? Will the future of B2B simply be our marketing algorithms negotiating directly with their procurement algorithms in milliseconds? Something to think about as you review your data stack this week. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive, and don't forget to subscribe.